Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hobbs and Friends of the OSR for another great episode. Tonight, I've got Kevin Madison of the Dungeon Musings of YouTube and blog fame. How you doing tonight, Kevin?
Good, Jay. How are you?
I'm great. I'm glad that we're actually finally getting to do this. We've actually, it's only been like 2 months since we've been talking about it, right?
Really? It's like herding cats trying to get, two busy guys together at the same time.
It's normally my fault. You've been great. I mean, I'm terrible about it sometimes. So before we get into anything else, I got to say that Alessandro Bertolucci, you've got another Canadian listener. You're not the only one to Hobbs and Friends, right, Kevin? You're from Canada?
I am, yep.
Where at?
Well, I'm in, I live in Calgary, Alberta in Canada, which is just north of Montana. So it's the second province in from the west coast. We're the one with all the oil. So we are very much kind of like a Texas of the North, or some folks who grew up here like to pride it as that.
And do you are you a hockey fan? I mean, the Flames were in the playoffs for a little while.
I grew up in a city called Winnipeg, and we had a team called the Jets. And when I was a kid, we lost the Jets. I was not really a hockey fan anyway. I was more of a Dungeons and Dragons fan, to be honest. And then when we lost the team, it just gave me an excuse to say, well, I don't care about hockey anymore. I can stop pretending.
It's back now, though, right? It's still the Winnipeg Jets, right?
Yeah, well, it's back to the Winnipeg Jets, but they're a different team. Because the team that left Winnipeg went to, I think, I don't even know where. It's somewhere down south. And then the team that came back to the States was from somewhere else.
Oh.
So it's not technically there. Winnipeg is a hockey town, so they're thrilled to have the team back. You know, they didn't make it to the playoffs this year, so but that's sort of typical.
Not Winnipeg, but Calgary did.
Yeah, Calgary did. Yeah, so but yeah, no, I'm not really. So it is very much a hockey town, though. When the Flames choked out of the playoffs this year, there were a lot of long faces in Calgary.
All right, so that's enough of professional sports, I guess, since this is an OSR podcast. But hey. Since you're kind of a new guest on here, I've had some reoccurring guests, but you're obviously a new one. I thought I'd mention how we actually got to know each other is through gaming online, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's cool. Jared Rasher sent out a questionnaire or I guess a query or a call to arms for joining up and playing Shadow of the Demon Lord, and both of us answered.
Yeah.
That's about it, I guess, right?
Hobbs, have you seen any of Jared's YouTube videos before you joined the game?
No, none. I actually only knew Jared's name because he's a listener of another podcast or two that I listen to, Gaming and BS and Misdirected Mark. And I recognized his name because sometimes he would write stuff on the G Plus boards there. And that's all I knew him by. I knew him by nothing else.
Hmm.
Had you actually watched him before?
Yeah, I actually had, because I had for my son about a year and a half ago, I ran the for his birthday. I ran the Marvel Superheroes Adventure game, the one that was published by Margaret Weiss Games, and it's mm-hmm. It's got a bit of unusual dice mechanic. And Jared's one of the only ones who had an actual play YouTube clip of it. So I'd already watched through his things to get a sense of how the game plays. So I was familiar with him that way.
Oh, that's so. Yeah, he always talks about you or me being internet famous. He really is, then.
He
right?
really is blazing the trail. Yeah.
So yeah, well, there's an actual play on YouTube of all the sessions, and they're in their entirety. So they're like 3 hour long videos, which to me, I've tried to watch them and I can't. So I don't know how anyone else would be able to. So I applaud you for watching some of the others. That's a long time for me to watch people play games.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm sure this one is great because you and I are in it and Jared. So, you know, I don't know.
It's true. It's gripping material. Absolutely.
All right. So this is the segment of the show where we talk about like what we've done in gaming. And recently, unfortunately, we didn't get to play Shadow of the Demon Lord last week because you were at a con, right?
Yeah, I was at the Calgary Comic Expo this over the past weekend. So it's comics and TV and movie stuff, and I had a table there for some art stuff, and I just that was occupying my life the last like 2 weeks. And you said you've been quite busy as well, yeah?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
you actually sent us a picture of that. So when you say you had a table there, So you were selling prints of like the posters that you make of the other games that you run, or?
More like the, I just happen to have those two prints. I sent you guys those, or held up, I guess, on one of our YouTube things. In my, on, I mentioned, before we went live that I have a Star Wars, Fantasy Flight Star Wars role-playing campaign that I run every 2 weeks. On a Friday, with a bunch of friends from, you know, who I grew up with or, you know, who I've met throughout, the last couple of years. And none of us live in the same city, really. So we all join up on Skype. But one of the things I was doing was, doing posters, like, repurposing old movie posters. Like I did the old Michael Caine film, Get Carter. I did one of those for this, adventure where they had to go and do like a bounty hunting thing, capturing this Imperial moth. So I made a couple of those specific to the campaign. I'm intending to do one for our Shadow the Demon Lord one too, but that was really more of a one-off thing. The real sort of project I had for this con was, do you know who Robert McGinnis is? He's an artist who did like pulp covers in the 60s and 70s.
I don't think so, no, but it sounds cool.
You might recognize, like if you ever read like The Executioner or like any kind of like Mickey Spillane mystery stuff, he's got this very distinctive style. So what I did was I just took a bunch of superheroes and made like fake covers for books that don't exist. So I had a set of like Daredevil and Elektra and Jessica Jones and Superman, Batman, stuff like that.
And so you sold those there, or were you successful?
Yeah, it was. I mean, the con was a little slow this year, but the economy's not been great here because it's an oil town, so the price of oil's hurt everyone, so it wasn't as busy as we would hope, but it was still, you know, I paid for my table and paid for my prints, so I count that as a success.
Well, there you go. Yeah, if you paid for everything and you just had your time into it, you probably met other people or whatever. I think they're awesome. You should just sell them online, man. People would buy those for their gaming rooms.
I think they're not maybe get running afoul of some copyright laws that would be... Con is sort of a permitted thing, but if you actually get out and trying to hawk someone else's wares or something that someone else owns, then I mean, and you know, it's Marvel's owned by Disney, and they're not super forgiving in terms of copyright infringement. So,
I just mean like if you sold like people's own characters, like character parties, or like you just did them for commissions or something.
Yeah, it's, you know, to be honest, with between trying to do like tabletop gaming and the day job, I fit in an hour of drawing every day. That's sort of my like downtime. So the con once a year is a nice opportunity to get out and, you know, see people respond to my work, but it's not a job. So so long as I just, you know, make back whatever I spent on the booth and whatnot, that makes it a fun endeavor. But as soon as it becomes work, I've done commission work before, then it becomes another job.
I understand completely.
Yeah.
I do, for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's cool. Oh, I was going to mention Mac Bolan, the Executioner, right? That's
who you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm familiar. I used to read my dad's all the time, so.
Okay. Yes, you've probably seen it then.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He had an insane outfit back in, like, when he was actually, when he was working regularly. Something insane, like 200 covers a year or something. Like, it's just.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I could be all off in those numbers, but. It was he's very, very prolific, but.
The Destroyer, because I mean, he probably did those too, that guy, the Destroyer.
I think so. I would have to check online. I know for sure he did the Mickey Spillane covers, or some of them at least. He actually, you know what he did? You would recognize. He did the poster for Octopussy.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember the James Bond film, but it's a painted, this is back in the day when they would do painted posters rather than, you know, photo posters. Mm-hmm. And he painted that one.
Okay, cool. All right, so that's awesome. So the last part of this introduction here is the Everything About You. Have you ever heard of Ugly Kid Joe before, Kevin?
About your story?
Oh, Ugly Kid Joe, it's a band?
Ugly Kid Joe, yes.
Okay, that's what this is about, Everything About You, that song. But really all I do here is try and give information to my listeners a tidbit at a time. So a little bit every episode, and awesome if the guests could do the same.
Yep.
Today I'm going to mention that my first published writing was actually poetry while I was in college. My wife thought it would be cool to mention that. I don't have any of it. I've always said I was a poet, but I haven't done a lot of it lately.
That's super cool. Was it in a journal, or was it in like an anthology?
They chose some poetry from, you know, the whole school or whatever, and put it into like a yearly thing that they would put out and have some poetry in there.
That's super cool.
Yeah, it was cool. I don't have a copy, but yeah. There you go. What about you?
Well, I was thinking about this week. So the my first online publishing credit is through a game company that's not in existence anymore. It was in the late 90s and early aughts, a company called Decipher. They kind of like made their name with this Star Wars card game that was quite popular in the like late 90s. They published a Lord of the Rings role-playing game. They had licensed the rights to the film, so they didn't have anything from anything other than the original Core 3 trilogy, but they did a cattle call for people who wanted to write adventures for them, so I got to have an adventure published through them.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, I in thinking of it, I went back and read the adventure, and it's fucking terrible, but it was pretty cool to have it published, though.
That's what made you a millionaire, though, right? In the gaming industry, you just
for sure, yeah, because you know, in the so much money in it. Online publishing was such a lucrative endeavor.
Even now,
yeah, true that.
No kidding. All right, so the game that we play together is, you know, it's called Shadow of the Demon Lord. It's by Robert Schwab and Schwab Publishing, and Jared Rasher, the Knight Errant Junior, or the What Do I Know About guy. Isn't that what his thing is called?
I think so, yeah.
He runs the game, and like I said, that's where we met, and it's a pretty fun game. I would say, on a brief introduction about it, one of the things that I thought was really interesting is that it kind of talks about being this self-contained campaign, and I haven't read that much of the rules. I just got a book not that long ago, but the idea that there's going to be 11 sessions – and you're going to play, you may not have the same character all the time because if your character dies, but you could bring in another one or whatever. Each session, you know, then you'll advance in between sessions and then the campaign will be over. And presumably the Demon Lord comes or if you stop it or something happens. Is that right?
It's funny. So that's actually what got me interested in the game in the first place. I have a Shadow of the Demon Lord campaign that I run on Wednesdays, and when I first got into the game, it was the two selling points for me were one that you know, when you approach the campaign, you're doing 11 adventures and the campaign's done. And that's a really cool way of thinking about, because we all want to, you know, have campaigns go on forever, right? Like, you know, I love these characters so much, I'll never get sick of playing them. But having it structured in that way really does give a nice clear endpoint to the campaign. So I like that. And I don't know if you've read any of the I'm going to say Dungeon Master because, like, that's my first game, and I always say DM regardless of whatever game I'm playing. But have you read the DM section of Shadow of the Demon Lord?
No.
One of the cool things with it is that it's got a lot of replayability because every time if you use these rules, the Shadow of the Demon Lord, like the manifesting of this almost omnipotent presence, can be different each time, and you can randomly generate it. So it could be like, the, you know, earthquakes are occurring throughout the world and getting worse as time goes. Or it could be that 1 out of 10 people transform into beast men and suddenly go savage. And in my campaign, what we rolled up was that it's the fairy, like the fairy have been touched by the evil or corrupting presence of the Demon Lord. And they've become malevolent. So like where sprites would play little tricks like tying shoes together so people would fall, or like making a step wobble or whatnot, they would instead like cut people's feet off, or, you know, they would create a pit full of spikes or something. Like they're just much more evil. So each game you play has a completely, or each campaign can have a completely different sort of overarching theme to it.
So what would you say that, out of there, what's Jared doing?
I don't know. And I've been intentionally trying not to guess, cause I really like the way, okay, like not to spoil anything for any of the listeners at home, but the thing that seems to be the kind of overarching threat that we've got in our campaign is that troll spell thing.
Yes.
Because we're slowly learning a little bit more about what's going on about that and what the consequences that can come from that. And I imagine that's what, you know, the through line is going to be for all of our adventures.
Which basically it's mostly talking about the erosion of civilization itself into chaos, which enables the troll song to its completion, right?
Yeah. And I like that too, because I love the whole, like, you know, it's not hubris, but like the authors of their own misfortune. Like the reason the troll spell is going to go off is because humanity is greedy and violent and selfish and all these other negative things. So, you know, our way of preventing that, you know, from it reaching its, from what I understand so far in the campaign, for it to be prevented, we would have to sort of find some way to get everyone to get along, which in the world of Shadow the Demon Lord is not bloody likely.
Well, it's not likely any world, I don't think, is it?
Well, with our bunch of misfits as well, too, it's even less likely.
No kidding. That's why I'm like, gosh, I'm glad that if I didn't have Kane or Steve wasn't playing Abby, these are characters who actually feel like they're interested in redeeming themselves and possibly the world around them. I think we'd be in serious trouble.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's good how, you know, it's interesting because the two guys who are playing really eccentric characters in that, it fits the game for one. But it's really great because I don't see that in – I tend to play with the same group of guys or girls sometimes, you know, all the time. So we all sort of have fallen into our routine of everyone having kind of a collaborative, getting along, you know, groups. It just naturally works out that way. But it's really cool having characters in the group that are like – they're not at odds intentionally, just that by playing their characters accurately, they are at odds sometimes with what the, you know, the quote unquote group wants to do.
Yeah, for sure. At least most of them, we always try to make it. Fringes is obviously, even she's not at odds with anyone. She's just off on her own all the time, which is because she's batshit crazy, but already without getting insanity or whatever, like the rules can allow you to, the character is just played pretty mad, but.
You're reminding me of the other thing. So the one thing was the fact that it was done in one and that there was replayability. The second thing I really loved about it was that it's everything you need in one rule book. The theme of your podcast too. The intro to the Shadow of the Demon Lord, the little like blurb at the bottom, is written by the guy who was behind the original like what's called either basic D&D or like the Beckme. Basic, expert, companion, masters, immortal stuff. Because he was the one who put together there's an old book called the Rule Cyclopedia, which was like before they turfed that line altogether. Did you have that or are you familiar with it?
Oh, heck yeah, I'm familiar with it. This is Mentzer. So what he's talking about is Beckme. Yeah, Frank Mentzer. But Rules Encyclopedia was done by Aaron Alston, actually, which is gathering of the Beckme rules, a rewriting of them, basically. But yeah, I'm very familiar with Mentzer, of course.
Okay, so because he writes the intro to the game, and he's saying, like, that's what's so cool about this game. He sees him put together everything you need to run however long a campaign, however many times, in one book. And that's really impressive.
Yeah, it's very cool. And like you say, it's got a lot of playability, but it is like, I mean, almost any game that you buy, you would think kind of has replayability. You're not just going to play one campaign and never play it again. Some, I guess, but... normally that isn't going to be the situation. You know, you're going to run as many campaigns as you want forever and it needs to be core books, but most core books are going to be two different books, like a player's handbook and a DMG and a monster manual. Right. But this is all in one book. So I would agree with you for sure. I mean, it's, what is it? Not even quite 300 pages. So
I've got my copy here. It's it's not even 300 pages. So, you know, within that, and there's tons of cool little customization stuff. I'm sure when you get into the character stuff a little later, but characters have tons of customization. Monsters do as well. Like, there's some great rules for either on the fly or you know, if you want to plan ahead for modifying monsters to fit what you need for your adventure.
And it's a beautiful book.
Mm-hmm.
The production quality is great. The art is definitely fits the aesthetic that the book is, that the game is trying to put forth. It is an adult game for sure.
Yeah.
And it definitely goes, it's horror. It's almost like dark, grim, dark horror D&D or something, but it doesn't have to be D&D. It's just fantasy really. Right.
Yeah. One of the reviews I read before I picked it up was like, it was Warhammer fantasy role-playing, but a little less with the, you know, pseudo Europe trope and a little less of the black humor.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. In fact, I was putting out a teaser on the Hobbs and Friends of the OSR community on G+ today. And one of the questions I almost always ask my guest about whatever game we're talking about, I always ask if it's an OSR game. So this time I thought I would ask the listeners only on G+, but, you know, what do they think? And someone exactly said almost that identical thing, that it was RJ Thompson. It has roots in both old school D&D and old school Warhammer, which gives it its own thing. So I could see that for sure. Yeah, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a few people who chimed in on that, and if you want to read it, you have to join the club, I guess. You have to go into the community.
And what a great community. You know, the Shadow of the Demon Lord G Plus community is terrific as well. Like tons of I love the fact that there's tons of fan-created stuff that's on there. And I love that Rob Schwab is on there quite often too.
I don't follow it that much because I don't know that much about it and I'm just playing right now. But I own the book, so eventually I'm either going to sell them to James McGeorge because I know he wants them or or I'm going to run some stuff with it and then I'd probably be more involved with the community. But as far as – I only pretty much pay attention to our game community as far as that goes.
Okay.
And the Hobbs and Friends community, of course. All right. So that covers some of the brief introduction stuff. Kind of gotten into this quick personal thoughts. Like we said, the art is very good. It definitely has a consistent aesthetic about it, where a lot of other fantasy games, especially maybe even older games, their aesthetic is more implied, I guess, where this is strong in every aspect of it. Like you could play a lot of different types of D&D or DCC or BX or any number of those games, you could play a lot of different types of campaigns, where this one is really more of kind of horror, grimdark. I don't think that that detracts from it in any way. In many ways, it's kind of maybe a modernism where an author or a designer is saying, this is the game we're playing, and we're going to totally focus on that to make it the best type of game in that genre that we can. You know what I'm saying? Don't you think?
No, I totally agree. Like for a long, long time there, before once I got disillusioned with D&D 3.5, I started exploring more like universal systems like GURPS or Hero System. I mean, I played Champions from forever ago, but using that to do more things, that worked really well for a really long period. But lately, I've really been appreciating games that are designed to do the thing that they're, you know, designed to do.
Yeah.
Like games that are, this plays, it, you know, what happens at the table is what you... You know, what's implied by the art and what kind of game they say you're going to run. Like, it does have a lot of, you know, it's a dangerous and horrifying, like, you know, in our campaign, you know, gaining corruption from, you know, left, right, and center and gaining, like, those, a couple, sessions. Well, I mean, I guess one session ago, I missed the last one, but when we fought those, shades and in a lot of other games, all these games that ape, D&D, what you end up with is like level drain or there's some constitution loss or something like that. In this game, when you get tagged with it, you also gain corruption. So, and in the mechanics of the game, when you reach a certain level of corruption, you lose your character because they're irretrievably lost to the thrall of, you know, or the sway of the demon lord.
Yeah.
And that's a really cool mechanic. Like that really gives it that, it fits with that dark, you know, fantasy. There's a lot of other games in the past that have tried to, they call themselves dark fantasy, and really the way that they try to emulate that is just through, you know, some goofy insanity rules or, you know, really gruesome crit tables.
Yes.
Adding this into it really gives it that extra, I guess, for one, it gives it that extra way of emulating that corrupt, evil, you know, permeating everywhere feel. Then this is a bit of a segue here, but the other thing I dig about the game is that we still feel like, you know, kick-ass heroes, though. And I think that sometimes is lost on some other fantasy or dark fantasy games, is that the sword should cut both ways, right? That your characters can take down stuff really quickly and can dish out a lot of damage, or, you know, use ways to control the combat or control the encounter so that you can, you know, kick people's asses with careful planning and whatever else. But it goes the other way too, that if you don't do that, you can really die pretty easily.
Yeah, it does. It has definitely that. And to go back to your corruption rules, all the different mechanics it has to model that interact with each other. It does have its own insanity rules. It does have its own corruption, and those things can be affected back and forth to try and save you or whatever. But it definitely fits within this model of horror fantasy, really, for sure. Mm-hmm. And like you say, the combat, you're definitely not incompetent. Even at first level or zero level, we weren't nearly as incompetent as zero level characters in a funnel in Dungeon Crawl Classics. And now, I mean, we feel much more powerful. Our characters are definitely dishing out some stuff, but not too much. We're not, it also doesn't go over the line. I would say it's epic in its concept because, you know, you're going to be level 11 by the end, and you're going through a long process of a story that is interconnected all along. And it's always going to be the same thing, you know, trying to stave off the Demon Lord. I mean, or maybe helping it come. I guess you could do it that way, too. Aren't there supposed to be ways of doing that or something?
I'm not sure with the, you'd have to fudge the mechanics in order to do that because, you can gain corruption from doing things like murder.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
So like you, if you start playing your character in an evil kind of way, rules as written, you'd be a thrall to the Demon Lord. It doesn't mean you necessarily have to play a goody two shoes character. It's just that you can't really play murder hobos in this and expect to, you know, keep your characters for very long.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So yeah, that's definitely cool. Like we said, it has a strong aesthetic and it sticks to it and it has mechanics to follow it up. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much the big three right there.
Yeah.
Another mechanic that I find pretty interesting is the whole Boon Bane aspect. What that is basically most of your skills and things you're trying to do is going to use a D20. But instead of getting tons of different bonuses one way or another, you can also get these boons or banes, which means a boon is a D6 that you get to add to the D20, and a bane is a D6 that you subtract. And the most you can have is three either way, but they offset each other in different situations. And those don't, even though you have three, you only get to take the best one. So still the best rolls that you could have is like a 26, right?
Yeah. Plus your, whatever your
stat,
trait modifier is.
Yeah, your stat bonus or whatever. So what I mean is you're not getting in the 30s or something because you're rolling, you know, 3d6 with every 20. So it doesn't get crazy out of hand like some games do with the bonuses and stuff.
There's not the exponential growth of characters. I mean, like, you're going to be a little tougher. You're going to be a little more competent. You're going to have a little more things to do. It's not like and I'm not meaning to shit on Dungeons & Dragons. I love D&D. D&D, the characters that you're playing at first level are unrecognizable when you get to 12th level.
Yeah.
Say, right? Like, there's just a different game you're playing at that point. And through this, you expand mostly outwards than you do up, right? You get more options of things to do and more things to you know, tricks in your bag of tricks rather than just being more, you know, cosmically powerful or whatever.
Yeah, broader. Your characters get broader with their skill capabilities and what they can affect, even though they seem to get broader. But at the same time, as you go through the paths, you're focusing in a very specific direction. But because every level you're getting something, even if it might not be from your skill, you could be getting it from your heritage, which would be like your race. But you can also get it from some of the novice path that you took previously. So each level you're getting something, which is, like you say, making your character broader. But not super powerful because you can still only have three boons at the maximum.
Yep.
All you're doing is subtracting boons with banes, depending on what the situational modifiers are, which are normally banes. Then they affect your boons, and then you just roll. And like I say, though, you're still not needing massive magical items to hit stuff or anything like that because that aspect, exactly like you said, doesn't grow exponentially. It still seems to feel about similar to where you are when you started. We're doing a little more damage, but that's it. You know, the things you're fighting are way tougher though. Not necessarily harder to hit because you usually in anything, any skill that you're trying to do, you only need a 10, right? Isn't that the whole deal?
It's when it's an uncontested thing, it's a 10, which is really cool because it's easy to remember. And it means that, you know, you're not going to suffer the, you know, situations where characters who are hyper competent are just failing at things on a standard dice roll.
Mm-hmm.
But you, when it's contested is when you're going to have a target number set by something else. So that'll be like the defense or maybe the strength or one of the attributes or something like that. I'm trying to think. I'm not sure there's anything that is a contested roll, but I could be wrong about that.
I feel like sometimes when he makes a magic check, it adjusts what the save is that a creature might have to make in order to fight against the magic. Does that sound right or no?
Well, we actually don't. Well, okay, so there are some spells that are that will target. One of the nice things they have is that it's all largely just one dice roll for task resolution. So, but like if there's a spell, it will either target someone's specific attribute or the spell will happen, and then you get to make a response check to that. Like a fireball spell, you'll have a chance to make a I can't remember if it's called dexterity or agility. I think it's agility check to try and, like, you know, hop out of the way of it.
Yeah, so it does have some interesting mechanics, like we said, that support the horror fantasy. But at the same time, It also has just regular mechanics that you could easily port into something else if you want. The Boon Bane is as easy to port in as using inspiration or, you know, the 2d20 things in 5e, or just it'd be very easy to add it in. And it's pretty new. I've never really seen it before. So it's pretty cool. Do you have any last minute things to say about Jared's Shadow of the Demon Lord game? Do you have a want to talk about Vigdis at all? Or
no, well, actually, okay, it leads into the one mechanic that I'm not crazy about in the rules as written, but they address in one of the supplements. So in Jared's campaign, I play a Jotun who's like a, they're like kind of like a half giant character who was a slave before and now has sort of fallen into the resident meat shield kind of role in it. I love playing him. Like I'm one of those players who tends to play the same type of character over and over again, whereas the you know, big tough guy who's sometimes not so smart. I love playing those characters, and that's what I'm playing there. And the game does a really good job of making him feel, you know, like a big tough guy. Like I've never felt that I couldn't toss smaller characters around or stuff like that, because I get an extra boon against when I'm trying to do things like grab or grapple or knock down or whatever, anything where I'm trying to apply physical force that isn't just combat. I'm getting an advantage on that. And it feels great. It feels like it, you know, it should. The reason I ended up playing that also is because the rules as written has this really wonky way of managing your spells. Like I like the way spells and the different schools work in Shadow of the Demon Lord, but the rules as written, you have to track how many times you use each individual spell per day. And that's mm-hmm. just like, it makes, you know, old school D&D look like an easy bookkeeping exercise. It's just crazy. You're playing a spellcaster. Have you found that a bit of a, you know, a tough thing to keep track of, or?
I haven't been doing, I just started with spells, and I mean, what are we, sixth level or something like that? And most of the time I just use them to increase my other stuff. I just use those. I use the spell slots to increase my damage or whatever. So I haven't used a spell yet, honestly.
The fortunate thing is in one of the supplements, Forbidden Rules, they give optional rules for implementing like a mana system where you just have like a pool of points and then you cast all your spells from that one pool. That's right. When I run Shadow of the Demon Lord, that's the rules I use, because I just, it's easier, and I don't see there being anything. I can see the logic of like, once you've used up a certain kind of spell, it does force you to find inventive ways of using other kinds of spells, but I don't think the what that adds to the game is worth the hassle of trying to track all that crap. And I'd sooner just give spellcasters the versatility. If they want to rely on the same spell over and over again, you know, they could fill their boots. That's fine. And it's easier to, I think, track than, you know, than the list of spells, especially with wizards or magicians, they get a huge amount of spells. So trying to track all of those things is entering into spreadsheet territory. So.
And so, I'd like to say, Jared does do, like, he also, not only does he do the videos of the game that we're playing, the actual plays, he also does follow-ups that are only like 13 or 20 minutes long or something, where he's talking about why he was doing certain things. So if anyone ever wants to watch those, you should check it out. And I'd like to say that I think Jared's doing a good thing. And even though I kind of made fun of watching a 3-hour video about people playing games, some people like to do that. Like, it helped you play a game, you know, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm never a person that says anything about anyone. What they're doing is bad, wrong, fun. It may just sound funny to me and I would never do it, but I don't care what the hell you guys do. You guys do whatever you want. I think it's great.
You know, when I watch it, it's for drawing. Like when I'm doing my drawing, I need to have some, if I've got TV on, I might watch it. If it's a good TV or a good film, I'll watch it. If it's just a good podcast, I just listen and I don't get distracted from what I'm supposed to be doing, which is drawing.
And you could do that. It doesn't even have to be the podcast. It could just be, like you say, an actual play on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes total sense to me.
One thing I was going to ask you, Hobbs, is have you ever done something like Jared's doing with a campaign, or with our campaign, where it's, you know, one adventure per session and then you go up a level?
No, never.
No, me either. I'm really, really impressed with how he's put that campaign together, because it would drive, like, I'm not sure I could pare it down an adventure as well as he's been doing and have it just 2 hours in and out, and then we're up a level.
Yeah, and then he fills in the stuff, like if some certain amount of time goes by, he kind of tells you what's happening, and it actually has some rules in there about downtime and what might happen and how much it costs you or whatever. All right, so we were going to talk a little more about some of their products, but we're almost out of time. And so I have to mention the contest that I've been hyping on Twitter and G Plus, which is in conjunction with Gaming and BS podcast with Sean P. Kelly and Brett B. All right, so here it is. It's an OSR encounter design contest. What you need to do, create a 1 to 2 page encounter that is built with an OSR flavor and approach first and second level characters. Well, you know what? He's going to have this on his webpage, and we'll put that in our notes. I'm not going to read this whole page because that would be ridiculous. But basically, one entry per person. Submissions should be emailed to gamingandbs@gmail.com or hobbsandfriends@misdirectedmark.com. I'll have a link in the show notes about all the information about this contest. There's some decent prizes. First place and the runner-up gets a Book of the Tarrasque PDF from Encoded Designs. And they have like the Greyhawk book, the original Greyhawk book that came in the white box or the brown box. One of the supplements is what first place gets. So that's pretty cool. So we'll have some more information then as that goes. We talked a lot about this because Kevin can talk. He's awesome.
I've never been accused of having too little to say. So.
All right, so there's the contest information, which was very minimal, but I want to thank some of our patrons. It's the three Erics today, Eric Jensen, Eric Mills, and Eric the Hoff Hoffman. Thanks, you guys, for being patrons of the show. It's awesome. It's greatly appreciated. The Patreon is patreon.com/OSRNHobbs. I was going to read some reviews, but I don't think we really have time for that. But what I will do is read one email that I wanted to read that I got from Tara Frank. Basically, it said, thanks for mentioning bipolar disorder. So I've enjoyed your podcast so far, but I was especially impressed that you were so open about having bipolar disorder on the last episode with Paul Wolf. I also have bipolar disorder and mental illness, along with many other gamers. Every acknowledgement of gamers like us helps make this great hobby more accessible. My sincerest thanks, Tara. So thanks for writing the email, Tara. And I went back and forth with Tara a few times, and eventually I'm going to have Tara on the show. So thanks for sending an email, and anyone who wants to, you can send it to that email that I just said, Kevin. what was it? Here it is. HobbsandFriends@misdirectedmark.com. All right, so news about the zine. It is the writing is done for the adventure. All that's left is a little corruption, OSR corruption rules that I want to finish. And hopefully in the next 2 weeks, it should be out. I want to have physical copies at North Texas. Where can we reach you if anyone wants to ask you about any of this stuff, Kevin?
They can reach me at either by leaving a comment on one of the Dungeon Musings videos or at dungeonmusings@gmail.com. Let me actually just quickly, double check that address. All right. Yes, Dungeon Musings, plural. So Dungeon Musings, all one word, @gmail.com. You can feel free to shoot me a line about anything or correct me on rules that I've gotten wrong, because that will not be the first time that I've gotten rules wrong in a role-playing game.
Right. As always, you can find me on G+ at the Hobbs and Friends of the OSR G+ community, 246 members strong now. Awesome, guys. Tell all your friends. Or on Twitter, @HobbsIndeed. Or at OSR and Hobbs. You got any last words there, Kevin?
Nada. Thanks so much for having me.
Hobbs and Friends is a member of the Misdirected Mark Network, the media arm of Encoded Designs.